So for this evening's talk, I was requested to talk about the Nepalese earthquake and a few other little things, and how Buddhists can have a good attitude towards these things. So the talk this evening is about dealing with disasters. And I just did joke that I've been part of this Buddhist society for 31 years, so I know how to deal with disasters, with all the committee meetings and stuff. But that's only a joke. It's a very, very good committee we've had here for 30 years. But there are these big disasters which happen every now and again in the world, and I've been old enough now to see quite a few of them and just to learn from them and learn how to deal with these things. And of course, when you're right in the middle of it, you can't get much perspective, which is one of the reasons why I give talks like this, to broaden the perspective, to understand exactly what's happening, why, and how we can deal with these things in a positive way. And one of the first disasters I was really aware of, having been brought up in London, born in 1951, and I still remember as a young boy going past what my father called the bomb sites. The Second World War had finished in 1945, but there were still many, many buildings which were still just piles of rubble. And of course, my family, and especially my parents and grandparents, would tell stories of what it was like in London during that time, when it wasn't just an earthquake. There were thousands of bombs being dropped every night. And even a personal story. You may have visited those old cities, like London, where the houses were cramped together so tightly that the next house was only a thin brick wall away, so you could hear what other people were saying. And that's where my mother and her father and her mother, that's my two grandparents, were living. She was an only child. And one evening, during one of the bombing raids, a bomb hit the house next door. Direct hit. So the neighbours, which were, you know, just over there, were totally killed. And my mother was lacerated with the flying glass. She survived. My grandmother was very shocked. My grandfather was out as a fire warden. But they came that close to death. And they saw many of their friends, their neighbours, dead. And this was not one night, night after night after night after night, for months. And in that time, they developed this wonderful quality we call resilience, and an understanding about life and death. I know that sometimes people talk to me and say, "You're a monk, you don't live in the real world." I made a joke about that, I think, last week. But quite frankly, that these days people don't live in the real world. They have this illusion that life goes on forever, that you're perfectly safe, that accidents, disasters, tragedies don't happen to me. They happen to other people, but not to me. Other people get cancers and die when they're young, but not me. Other people just involved in car crashes, fires, earthquakes, tsunamis, but not me. And what people learned, you know, that you're involved in this as well. It can happen to you at any time. And what this did to my parents and that whole generation was to have a beautiful sense of, number one, resilience and stoicism. In other words, you don't know when you're going to die, which means to make the best use of every day you have for those people. And I say this carefully. Those people who are fortunate to have been through a cancer, where they've been told they've only got a certain amount of time to live, and through some miracle, I would just say it's just a change of attitude, they survive and go into full remission. It does change your whole life, the way you look at life. You never ever take health and life for granted. It is really looked upon as a gift to use wisely, not just some birthright. So one never feels entitled anymore, one feels grateful. Unfortunately, these days people feel entitled to long life, health, safety. And if someone takes that entitlement away, often nature, we want someone to blame. And unfortunately, when I do see many disasters, we always want to blame somebody, find someone who's at fault. And apparently now, even in Nepal, they can't really blame, you know, the nature or geology, but they're blaming governments for not sort of working hard enough to try and help them. And it's not the right time to do a blame game. And the reason why people even blame is because they think that something they're entitled to has been taken away from them. You're not entitled to life. It's a gift. Be grateful for it. When you don't feel you have a right for it, but it's a gift, then that changes some of the whole ball game. You value your life and you accept when sometimes, you know, it's taken away from you. You have that great resilience in the face of life and death. And certainly that my family and friends at that time came away from that experience of a Second World War where everyone just, you know, you went to bed at night, you didn't know whether you'd wake up in the morning. They came out of that with another different way of looking at life. And, you know, they did really want to make a better world and not just a materialistic, comfortable, rich world, but a better world. And certainly in England, that's where we got the National Health Service from after that, trying to care for everybody, realizing that just health is not just a privilege of rich people, but should be fair for everybody to care for each other. It's wonderful, 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 great ideas. You know, the Declaration of Human Rights, the UNDHR, came after that Second World War. There was a great increase of morality and inspirational goodness which arose in the world afterwards, which is a wonderful thing to see. Out of that disaster, not just resilience, but a value for the meaning of life so great that we actually made some changes. But today, that when something goes wrong, we want to blame. We think that something has gone wrong. And that's the first thing which in Buddhism, nothing has gone wrong. This is one of the little stories. I haven't said this for a long time. That if you get sick, I remember getting, I'm a very healthy monk, surprise, 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 but it's been a long time since I've been sick. But I remember many, many years ago, I was very sick. I didn't really know what was wrong with me, so I got an appointment with my local doctor. And I was sitting in the waiting room of his surgery in Byford. That's the closest doctors we had at the time to Bodhinyana Monastery in Serpentine. I was sitting in the waiting room, waiting for my appointment. And a friend came in. He was actually one of the prison officers at Karnak Prison Farm, where I was teaching meditation regularly, so I knew him from there. And he came and looked at me and said, "I never expected to see you in here," because he thought I was a monk living a healthy lifestyle, meditating, and I shouldn't get sick. I felt so guilty. I'm a monk. I'm not supposed to get sick. And from that moment on, I thought, I demand my right as a monk to be sick. If you are a vegetarian, eat healthy food and exercise and do yoga and do meditation and have no stress in life, it doesn't matter. You can still get sick. So, from that time on, I realized, no, I demand my right to be sick. And so when I go to see the doctor, I would tell him. He said, "What's wrong with you?" I said, "There's nothing wrong with me, doctor. I'm sick again." What's wrong with being sick? So I ask people these days, and you actually do this because I get some feedback from doctors. They say, "I saw one of your students again today. How do you know it was my student?" Because they came into my surgery and they told me, "Doctor, there's something right with me. I'm sick again." Because what we're saying, there is nothing wrong with being sick. So take away the guilt trip from it. Take away the negativity. It's part of life, being sick. As it's a part of life, dying. It's not wrong to die. Don't feel guilty that you're dead. There are ghosts, so any ghosts here, okay, you know, it happens. So don't feel guilty about it. You didn't make a mistake. It just happens to all of us sooner or later. You just get there first. You're ahead of the game. But sometimes we feel it's something wrong. And even like doctors, sometimes they feel they made a mistake when somebody dies. And that's one of the things in this culture which I feel is very, very unhealthy. That death is always looked upon as being a mistake. The worst possible outcome. Matters of life and death are the most important because we just fear death so much. And as far as I'm concerned, it's not a matter of dying, it's a matter of what you do in between birth and death. It's the quality of your life, not the time of your death or the man of your death, the quality of your life. And when we look at these things in a different way, in a Buddhist way, when there is a disaster, many, many people die. Why are you so upset? Why are you so afraid of death? Why is it such a tragedy? To me, dying is not a tragedy. It's how you live your life. And people who live their life selfish, angry, not contributing, the rich people never give donations, selfish people, that's a tragedy, the way people live. Other people, they live beautiful lives. That's a joy, that's a celebration. The death is not that important. What is really important is the way we live. And so when there is a sort of a big, what we call just an event, because I'm not going to call it a tragedy now, an event, just like an earthquake or a tsunami, it teaches us something really important, just how that we've only got a certain amount of time, we never know when our time is up, so we have to make use of every moment and not waste anything and don't have the tragedy of living a bad life. The death is not important, not how you die, when you die, how long you live before you die. That's nothing to do with tragedy, it's how you live a life. That can be tragic, or it can be beautiful. But often people ask us, they always do, when of Buddhists, when this happens, is it karma? Was it all these people in Kathmandu, all the people in Sri Lanka, in Phuket, who died in the tsunami? Is it all the people who, what's all these other tragedies? The people who died in the ferry disaster in Korea, all the people who died in the earthquakes in Pakistan, all the people who died in the storms and the bushfires? Did they do some terrible karma altogether? They have to die together. And the answer to that was a story from my own master, Ajahn Chah. And this is a powerful story. It's simple, but it is profound. So don't just think this is a joke. It may sound funny to you, but this, when I heard this, wow, this changes things and the way I look at life. That was when he had one disciple in the northeast of Thailand who was drafted into the Thai army. And the first few days he was on some border patrol. And even though there was not a legitimate war on, there was always skirmishes, I think it was on the Cambodian border. And the Cambodian troops and the Thai troops were shooting each other. It wasn't official, but it was happening. And he got shot, he got wounded quite badly. And so that once he recovered, I forget what the injury was or the disability was, he came up and saw the great Ajahn Chah and said, "Now, what karma did I do to deserve this? I've been badly wounded and disabled. What karma did I do this?" And Ajahn Chah, without missing a beat, said, "It is karmic cause, and the cause of this was you joining the army. That's a karmic cause of you being shot." And he said, "If you join an army, you're going to shoot other people are going to shoot at you. That's why you got shot. If you hadn't joined the army, you wouldn't have got shot. Simple as that. And it's not everyone gets shot, but this is part of the contract. You are likely to get shot." And he carried on by saying, "Anybody who joins this army called humanity, who gets birth as a human being, you should read the contract before you take birth in this realm. If you read the contract, it would say that you can die at any time for any reason. It can be a cancer, it can be a car crash, it can be a heart attack or a stroke, a tsunami, a bushfire, a plane crash. It could be sort of anything. That is part of being a human life. That is the karma of being a human. To die at any time, for any reason, multiple reasons. Now you know the rules of the game, and we have to live by those rules. And when we jump up and down and complain about those rules, why does the earthquake happen? Why do tsunamis? Why do sometimes people get depressed and slam an aircraft into a hillside in France or Switzerland, wherever it was? Why does this happen? Because they're human beings. We make mistakes. Because it's the nature of the planet in which we live on. It's because of all these different causes. So what we have to do is actually accept and learn to live with things rather than fighting against things. The simple but deep teaching of Buddhism. When I was asked years ago by someone in Singapore, had to be Singapore, they were in a rush, they had to get to work, and they said, "Ajahn Brahm, please teach me the Four Noble Truths, quickly, because I've got to get to work." And so I said to them, you know, I rose to the occasion, and I said to them, "This is the law of suffering, and suffering is asking from the world what it can never give you." And then he left. And that's a very, very powerful teaching. It is what the Buddha called the Four Noble Truths in a nutshell. Asking from this world something it can never give you. Total safety. Being in this world, no government, no sort of scientists can predict, you know, where earthquakes happen, where tsunamis happen, bushfires. If we could really predict that, then we wouldn't have to die. No sort of scientist or doctor will ever be able to prevent diseases happening. Yeah, we can maybe overcome one disease, like, you know, manage to do that with, smallpox. But then other diseases come up. And is there, haven't you seen yet that there's always going to be diseases, there's always going to be causes of death. And asking from the world what it can never give you, now that is the problem. So when we know the rules of the game and live by those rules, we don't complain. You know, when those rules happen, like an earthquake. We know it's going to happen one day. If it's not that, it's something else. So number one, we don't complain. And we learn to live from this. And one of the things is, there's always these beautiful things happen in disasters. And those moments of like kindness and charity and selflessness, it does give us the opportunity, you know, to help and to serve. And it does give us the opportunity to get past these stupid barriers of race, culture, religion. Because, you know, in an earthquake, you don't worry who's a Muslim, a Christian, a Buddhist, a Hindu. If someone's under that rubble, you dig them out. And you don't care who digs out who. And this is a wonderful time when, at last, we realize that being a human being is more important than being a Buddhist, or a Hindu, or a Christian, or a whatever, a gay, lesbian, transgender. The things which can sometimes divide us, they don't count at all in tragedies. People work together. And they respect one another. And they make friendships. And they make these wonderful bonds which are sometimes impossible. I'm sure you've seen so many stories of people in tragedies. Just people who shouldn't get together, you know, Palestinians marrying Jews, people who just become friends for life even though their parents fought to death over whatever religious ideology they believed in. It transcends those stupid things which we have in our world, which divides us and separates us and makes us different. Because in a tragedy, no one is different. We are all the same. We realize human beings, the same color blood, the same broken bones, the same screams, the same tears. And number two, it does give us the opportunity to do better next time. When there is an earthquake, we can make the building safer. We can, look, I remember my history lessons. Okay, I was European. History lessons, the great fire in the 17th century in London. Half of London was destroyed with this big conflagration. Many people died, they lost their property. And so what did the people in the city do? They made a new city, a much better city. And apparently, if I'm not mistaken from my history, which I'm getting a bit old now, so I do forget things, that they decided to, for once, they had a chance, because all the buildings were gone, to do a proper sewage system under the city. Because it's so hard to dig under people's houses to get permission from things, but now there's a whole lot of cleared part of London, let's put proper sewage in. And interestingly, that whoever designed the sewage system decided to actually to get the smaller pipes going into the bigger pipes, going into the bigger pipes, based on the veins in a leaf on a tree, with the same angles. He didn't know why the engineering, the technology wasn't advanced then, but this is the way that the sap goes into the leaves. Maybe this is the best way to get good flow through the sewage system, and that's what they did. And it's, of course, it's been working for centuries now. And so when you have a tragedy, there's always opportunities as well. And one of the things is that whenever there is a tragedy, whenever there's something goes wrong, if we go blaming someone, we're missing the opportunity. And I'm just going to go off on another, I'm being controversial again, the death of the two Australian drug traffickers, Chan and Sukumaran. People are blaming Indonesian government or blaming the AFP, the Australian police, for being complicit in just them getting arrested. Blaming people, is that going to really help? Why don't we, the obvious elephant in the room, drug trafficking, can't we use this opportunity to see the tragedy of people who get involved in the trafficking and consumption of illicit drugs? Because this is the biggest problem. If we didn't have the huge profits to be made from things like heroin and the people who want to buy it, you know, those people, they wouldn't have even started that terrible trade. Let's not blame people for being greedy. Well, we can blame them for being greedy. But, you know, but what about the big thing? Can't we use this as another incentive to try and do something to stop this, you know, terrible trade of heroin? Because this is a personal thing, because I've had friends. I had one of my best friends at school together, Adam, his name was. I won't say his surname. And he also went to Cambridge, you know, studying medicine. Got a place at Cambridge studying medicine. Brilliant guy. He was with a friend. We used to go to parties together. Went to Cambridge together, where he got addicted to heroin. And that was the end. He never completed his... Oh, he did complete his degree just. But when he went to med school, he kept taking the heroin and everything else from the cabinet, and was an addict. And he would steal from his friends. At that time, I was a monk in Thailand. He couldn't steal from me. But all my friends were saying to him, you know, just, this was your mate, your friend. You want to care for them. But every time he went around to their houses, he couldn't stop himself, but stealing this, stealing that, from his best friends who he grew up with, because the addiction to heroin, he had to find the money. And I know other people here, a tragic case of a Thai boy, the son of Thais, who got murdered because he was, you know, in the heroin gang. He wanted to try and get out. They would not let him. He knew too much. It's a disgusting trade. And you see how it ruins people's lives. So why can't we use it's a tragedy. Any death is a tragedy. As a Buddhist, obviously you don't support the death penalty for anything, even for Bali bombers. You know, you may disagree with me now, but that's, Buddhists don't agree with death penalties. It's against the first precept, killing. And anyway, what can we do? Instead of blaming people, let's try and do something about it. And so use a tragedy. Use something like this. Can't we just try something more? to say, this is what happens when you get involved in drugs. You know, and when you want to traffic it, sell it. And this is how these terrible, terrible things happen, and the problems with the family of those two young guys who got killed. Whether you think they should be grief-stricken or not, they are. And I would have thought, if I was Tony Abbott, I would have actually said, well, we don't agree with the death penalty, but it's happened. Can't we, with the President of Indonesia, tighten up our cooperation so we can stop drugs? Let's use this, not as a way to divide our nations, but to cooperate more, to try and lessen this terrible, terrible trade, which destroys so many people in both our countries. Blaming is not the way of Buddhism. Learning and doing better next time is the way. And so when there is any of these tragedies happen, Buddhist way is actually, let's make sure we do better next time. Not jumping up and down, getting upset, but actually learning and trying to do better. And that is the best legacy we can give. For those people who feel, for those people who have died, lost their homes, being injured, sometimes injured for life in a thing like an earthquake. For those people, because the Koreans were here just last week, you know, doing their filming, or the week before. For those who in Korea listening to this, you know, who are worried still about all those kids who died in the Sewol ferry disaster in Korea just over a year ago. Instead of just the people who still are upset about what happened in other tragedies in this world. Instead of getting upset and grieving, getting angry, which doesn't help anybody, can't we instead learn and do better next time? And do something better out of this. Again, after the Great Fire of London, they rebuilt London. After the huge war in Europe, they formed the European Union and tried to get much better cooperation between all the different peoples of Europe. And just now you can actually travel anywhere in Europe just on the same passport. You know, you don't really feel there's anything different. You're a European before you're German, before you're Swiss, you're a European first. And that's a beautiful thing, to have something good come out of great tragedies. And if anybody who is, instead of grieving for the things which happened in Nepal, let's see if we can do something better for the people who have died. What can we do better for the people who have died? Another little story. Many, many years ago, when we first got this center here, a woman came up to me. She was just so guilty, big time guilt. Because her story, she was working up north in the mines. This was before the fly-in, fly-out time, when people would actually travel up there. They'd stay for months up there. And you know, they make a huge amount of money, then come back and just buy a house or just get started in life, you know, working up in the mines as a young person in the sort of the 80s, I think. And anyway, she was up there with her best friend and her best friend's boyfriend. And one afternoon when they didn't have any work, they weren't on shift that time, she was bored. You can imagine being up north, nothing to do. Let's go for a ride in the four-wheel drive. Her best friend said, nah, I don't feel like it. I'll just watch a movie with my boyfriend. Nah, come on, let's go for a ride. And she argued, cajoled, and talked her best friend and her boyfriend going in a ride with her. And on the ride, they had accident. The boyfriend was killed, her best friend was paraplegic. She was unharmed. She was the driver. And she felt, if only I had not forced my best friend and her boyfriend to come on this drive with me, my best friend would not be paraplegic and her boyfriend would be alive. Now he's dead. She felt guilty. When I tried to talk to her, I said, look, it wasn't your intention, it was not on purpose, there's no karma there. That didn't work. You can understand why. Still, Guilt is something which is so brainwashed into the Western world and now into much of Asia as well, always feeling guilty and wanting to blame people instead of forgiving and moving on. Still, I couldn't convince her not to feel guilty. So, do something about this. Instead of getting negative and getting depressed or even suicidal, which she was, why not use that experience to do much better in your own life? Go to Shenton Park, which is the rehabilitation units of the hospitals in Perth. Volunteer or learn occupational therapy or whatever. Don't just get negative and depressed and guilty. Do something about it. So I said, your penance, if you want a penance, is volunteer in the OT wards of Shenton Park and actually help people who are paraplegic or quadriplegic. Do something. And that is so important, because too often people get guilty, they're grief-stricken, they feel that something's gone wrong, and that negativity doesn't help anybody. But imagine that person, they did go there. I'm not quite sure exactly where they've gone to now, but if she's around and hears this talk, please let me know where you got to in your sort of career. And I'm sure that something wonderful has happened to her. And that is something good which came out of a tragedy. So whoever you are, if there has been a tragedy in your life, don't just go down there and cry, because that's just, please, I'm going to be quite cruel here. That's being selfish. We cry for ourselves. We don't cry for the people who died. We feel sad for ourselves. It doesn't help anybody. And I said, look, one day I'm going to die here, and if any of you feel even a moment of grief when I die, what have I been teaching you all these years? I've been wasting my time. When I die, I want you to go, yeah, woohoo! And I told people at my funeral service, you know, if you're around at my funeral service, I want, instead of saying these eulogies, oh, he was such a nice monk, he was a really good friend. No, I want you to remember the jokes you've heard from me and come up one after another and tell all the bad jokes you remember from me. Remember me with laughter. When you die, how would you like to be remembered? How would those people who've died in Nepal want to be remembered? Would they like to be remembered with people getting grief-stricken? How would Chanan Sukumaran want to be remembered? With anger? Or with saying, this is what drugs did to us, or what greed did to us. Please, no one else do that. Not with anger, not with bitterness, not with division, with something more productive, beautiful, holy, if you like. And so when anybody dies, don't feel grieved too long. It's not natural. It's added onto by our society. I say this because I was privileged to live in a society which hadn't been touched by the West. And that was in northeast Thailand. Central Thailand was westernized. The northeast, the places I went to, you know, no Western government had been there. And this is absolutely true. I went to some places as a Western monk. I was the first white man the village had ever seen. They didn't have any TV or movies there. Pretty much indigenous culture. And I was the first white man, let alone white monk, they saw. I remember just going to this one village in Nong Khai province, really remote. And I went on alms round in the morning. You've seen the monks on alms round with their bowl, and people put food in the bowl. And they were looking at me because they'd never seen a white man before, let alone a white monk. And the food was going outside the bowl. They were dropping it. The dogs were very happy. They really got a good meal that day because they were picking up everything. But I didn't get much that day because the first white man. So this was, you know, pretty much untouched. And there, You know, in that monastery which we were in, there's another monk who was in that, a man who's in that monastery at that time, sitting in the back there somewhere, that there's so many funeral services. But I never saw anyone cry at a funeral service in those places. And they weren't putting on the chauffeurs, because you go on alms round in their village, you go to their house in the evening to do chanting. And it was weird. There wasn't grief in that part of the world. They understood life and death. And they realized it's how you live your life, not death. It comes to all of us. The death is not a tragedy. It's wasting your life. That is a tragedy. And so they didn't have grief. And I remember telling that story at a grief and loss conference, which was held in the, I think they call it Rendezvous City now, the old hotel over in Observation City it was started off with. You know the one which Bond built in Scarborough? Going there, teaching at a grief and loss conference and telling things like this, and this woman coming up afterwards, and she was so angry at me. She was telling me, "What right have you to take away my grief?" And that was amazing to see how people just were attached to their grief and how they wanted to suffer. And that really shook me. I was showing her a way out, a different way of looking at things, but she just wanted to stay in there. And if you want to know why, okay. I haven't told this story for a long time, but it's in the book, the first book I wrote, Opening the Door of Your Heart. It's the last story in that book. There's a nice little story for you. It was about this, all the hard work which the monks have done, nuns have done here over these years trying to teach you. And what Ajahn Chah did trying to teach me. So there were two monks a long time ago. They were best of friends. And one day, they both died eventually. And one of the monks got reborn in a heaven realm. And he was having a wonderful time in this heaven realm. And he started to think, I wonder where my friend is. Because we were monks together. And being a being in a heavenly realm, he had powers. So he used his powers to search all the heavenly realms looking for his best friend. He couldn't find no trace of him. He hadn't been born in the heavenly realm. So he thought, yes, in Buddhism, the human realm is one of the best. Not too much happiness, not too much suffering for most. So it's a great place to understand the Dharma and become enlightened. He said, my friend must have been reborn in the human realm. So he searched all the human realm, couldn't find his friend anywhere there either. He said, my goodness, maybe because of some bad karma he's been reborn as an animal. So he looked amongst all the cows and the elephants and the horses, couldn't find his friend there either. Maybe one of the small animals, you know, maybe the little mice, or couldn't find his friend there either. And he kept on looking and eventually found his friend. And his friend had been reborn as a worm in a pile of shit. As a dung worm. And he thought, oh my goodness, how come he's ended up like this? He said, I can't let my best friend live like that. So he went up to this big pile of cow poo and he called out to his friend, hey, friend, you know, we used to be monks together in a previous life. I've been reborn in heaven, you've been reborn in this pile of cow dung. Come, I can help you. And this little worm, he poked his head out of the cow dung and said, what are you talking about? He said, we were friends together. Come, this is terrible where you live. I can take you to a much better place. And the worm said, look, hang on a moment. This other place you're talking about, this heaven, I want to ask you one question first before I go. Is there any shit up there? Of course there's no poo and dung up in heaven. It's clean and beautiful. And the worm said, if there's no dung up there, I'm not going. Because I like my dung. It's my food. It's fragrant. It's my home. This heavenly being could not convince, he thought, he couldn't convince a worm to go voluntarily. So he thought, no, he's my best friend. What if I grab him quickly and take him to heaven? Because once he sees it, surely he'll know for himself heaven is a much better place. So this heavenly being quickly grabbed hold of the worm. Now imagine, this is a worm covered with the most filthy stuff. And this is a heavenly being. This is like, you know, like the Queen of England or something, putting her hand in the toilet. You know, high beings don't do such stuff. But he was willing to do that for his friend. But the worm never wanted to go and was covered with all this slimy, slippery stuff, wriggled and writhed and escaped and went right down to the very bottom of the pile of shit. Right in the bottom of it. And what did the heavenly being do? Put his hand in and search for him. That was the power of friendship. You do anything for a best friend. He searched and searched and searched, found him and pulled him out, but the worm wriggled away again, pulled him out, wriggled away. And eventually the heavenly being had to give up and go back to heaven and leave the worm to his pile of shit. For over 30 years I've been teaching you. Trying to pull you out. What happens? You wriggle away again. Once the Friday night talk is over, you go back again. I love that story. It's really gross and very mean. And you've come a long way. But that's the trouble. People are attached. Even to, you know, smelly, stinky stuff. So for me to try and take people out of their grief, out of their guilt, out of their anger is such a tough thing to do. So, grief when somebody close to you dies. That is shitty stuff, isn't it? It stinks, it's not nice. So we try and take you out of that by understanding it's not a tragedy, it's how you live your life, good or bad. That's where goodness, celebration or tragedy lies, not in the way of the death. Try and anger and blaming. That's stinky stuff as well. It doesn't work. Try and let go of blame. Instead of blaming, learn. Do better next time. There's always opportunities to do better. And lastly, just, you know, whenever it's like guilt, especially people who've been in those disasters and survived, they feel, why me? Because you are tasked to carry on living, to learn from that tragedy you've been in firsthand, and to do better. But if you can make something better of your life, those people who survived the Second World War, to do better, to make a better world because of what happened. Those people, you know, last week was Anzac Day, the people who survived Gallipoli, to do better next time, to make a better Australia, or whatever, New Zealand, wherever you came from. Those people, you know, who survived the Sewol ferry disaster, out of respect for all those who died, we are going to live better lives, kinder lives, lives with less anger, with more sensitivity, more care for one another. Those people who died in Nepal, not just Nepalese, or the tourists, Indians, Chinese, whoever else was in there at the time, all those who died, let us use this as an opportunity. We died together, we helped together, we will grow together, and all these things which separate humanity, I will work hard to overcome those barriers and those walls which separate one faith from another, which divide people, one gender from another, to overcome people who have different ideas and allow those ideas without forming walls between us, to respect and to do that as our gift for those people who have died. That's much better than grief. That's much more productive than anger. That is how to deal with the disasters of the world. To build a better Kathmandu, a better Nepal, a better world. Out of respect for all those who've died. Thank you for listening. Very good. So we have some questions from the back. And for those who go early, we do have the bowl at the back for any donations, any spare cash. The Suu Kyi Foundation, they got an office here in Perth, and they are working, I saw on the internet, they're already working in Nepal with blankets and other stuff. It's a Buddhist organization. Anyway, here we go, the first question. Isn't it true that there is no such thing as a disaster? Very good. I say there is such thing as a disaster, and the disaster is some people's lives which aren't well lived. Their lives can be a disaster. Two weeks ago, I was at the, there's another Buddhist group in Maylands, the Buddhist Light International Association. They had a Buddhist birthday celebration in Langley Park. I was there, and the treasurer of our state, Mike Nahan, who knows me very well, he knows me too well, because he was recently in Sri Lanka and he told the story in public, in front of everybody, that that he was on holiday in Sri Lanka and the manager of his hotel said straight away to him, "Oh, where are you from?" He said, "I'm from Perth," said Mike Nahan. He said, "Oh, from Perth, do you know a monk called Ajahn Brahm?" And he found out I was quite famous, so in public, he said, in places like Sri Lanka, Ajahn Brahm is more famous than Paris Hilton. And I'm not quite sure if I like to be compared with Paris Hilton. And if you talk about disaster, Paris Hilton. Beautiful woman, lots of money, wrecking her life. And that's what I call disaster. Someone who is gifted, beautiful, wealthy, has all those incredible gifts, and they waste it. That is called a disaster. I don't know what she's doing now. Hopefully she's doing a much better job and doesn't sue the Buddhist Society of Western Australia for defamation. But the point is, there are people I know whose life is a disaster simply because selfish, just indulgent, nasty. Those are disasters. So isn't it true there's no such thing as a disaster? I know what you mean. This is a label from our perspective. Does good, bad, who knows apply to rape, murder, etc.? Oh, I can't say that. But here, a few months ago, amazing thing that there was a woman here who had been raped and quite badly, and somebody else said to her, "So that's a terrible thing which happened to you. That's so nasty, terrible." And she turned around to him and said, "What do you know? This is the best thing which happened to me. This has made me who I am." She said that. I can't say that. People with cancer, I can't say this. I've never had cancer. They said, "The cancer was the best thing which ever happened to me." There was an old story of another guy who was up in the north, and he got hit by the trolleys which were in the mine carrying the ore, and cut his legs off. It's simply because somebody forgot to put the brakes on. And when this guy who'd forgot to put the brakes on went to see him, he just saw him without any legs and just ran away. And he said, no, I don't feel angry. This is the best thing which happened to me. He had this incredible, powerful spiritual experience. I can't say this, I've still got my legs. But he said, it was worth losing your legs for, to find that meaning of life. So there's things I can't say about rape and murder, but sometimes people who have been in that situation has changed their lives for the better, in ways which I can't imagine, but it's true. disaster. It's how you make use of it. And there's cases of that. Anyway, is there a silver lining in everything? What are the benefits of being reborn in a lower realm? Something in California. Yeah, it's a great story of that worm who got reborn in a pile of shit. Gives us a good story to teach people what to do. Sometimes lower realms, many types of lower realms, you know, sometimes, and Buddhists sometimes say this, that things like dogs and lower realms animals have got no opportunity to make good karma. They have got opportunity to make good karma. There's, you know, they go to hospitals, pet therapy. Look at dogs and cats. Then we got one cat at Bodhinyana Monastery, a feral cat which we've tamed, and it does a lot of good karma, you know, giving a soft edge to all the monks who can pet it. We got a rat in the monastery too, but the cat doesn't do anything about that because it realizes it's a Buddhist and shouldn't kill the rat. Thank you, cat. So it depends on what type of lower realm, but you know, there are benefits in there. You know, sometimes animals can do good karma. There's one of the disciples over in Melbourne. She named her dog Chemo, this big, beautiful Labrador, because she was a doctor and she planned, and now she does this. She takes the dog into the hospitals to do, you know, pet therapy, chemotherapy. Because their dog is named Chemo, okay? And so she calls it chemotherapy. And this dog, you know, just allows patients to pat it and stroke it. And of course, you've all heard the research has huge benefits to people's health. Just having a cat or a dog to play with, it just brings up some softness and kindness in you. And that lessens tumors, increases recovery rates. It means infections get overcome much more easily. Just in a simple kindness, and dogs and cats can do a huge amount for that. So yeah, there can be a silver lining in everything. A silver lining is available in everything, but sometimes people don't see it and don't take it. But yeah, I'll say there's always an opportunity in every part of our existence to learn, to grow, to learn compassion, wisdom, and be a better human being, and try and make this a better world so we have a better life afterwards. So anyway, there we go. So thank you all for listening. Any questions from the audience here? Very good. Okay. So again, any tragedies in your life, what you call tragedies, look at them in another way. Instead of the last little saying, old Chinese saying, rather light a candle than complain about darkness. Very simple, but very profound. Okay, let's now pay respects to Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha.